There was some suspense and mystery to throwing a number into the void and seeing what came back the other side, but this is definitely more efficient.
Yeah, because you definitely had, like, the thing of thinking, well, higher has to mean better, right? And that's not necessarily true.
No, that's not. Quite frequently, it's not true.
I enjoyed saying a number and then just, like, giving it up to the universe. I'm like, whatever it comes back. Yeah, I had a six. I don't know what this is.
You tell me what that means.
No, what does the six mean to you?
Okay, this is good. I would love to roll prowess specifically in like a Julian Larbalest goes over and starts to kind of like poorly manhandle his son to try and get him to behave. Prowess is my worst stat. It is just a single d8. I would love, you know, we're rolling to see what's likely to happen here, but also the chance of failure here is very juicy in trying to make my son stop tantruming.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, you know,
failing on purpose, but mechanically, we are rocking a single d8 here. What am I up against in terms of difficulty?
So this is going to also be a single d8 of challenge.
Right. Well, that's a six.
Six. Okay, that is a success. You also get a knowledge. There is a complication. Mm. I think the complication here is pretty obvious. Trust is feeling extraordinarily awkward. Probably it's been a long time since she has seen a child. One thing I think that is working about Jonnet's emotional display here is to Truss, it doesn't seem out of place because Truss does not know how a child of Jonnet's age would normally act and is just kind of buying this whole ridiculous situation.
Mm-hmm. In the process of kind of like, there is, I want to almost kind of compare it to like wrestling. There is definitely a degree of like TV wrestling. There is a degree of like cheap heat that is being performed here. You know, the kicking and throwing is not really, is bapping off Orimar, and I was like, oh, you're raising such a fuss, but there's no damage done.
I feel like there's some kind of the move that Orimar probably does to like, oh yeah, like Orimar can do like a thing where he like grabs Jonnet's ear, and then in doing that, Jonnet like grabs Orimar's wrist, and now Jonnet is in control of where
pull.
He goes,
yes.
And so he really can just play it up and just like drag himself wherever.
As we kind of like drag ourselves sort of around the room, but mostly towards the door.
That's stupid.
I mean, I what better way to put a business conversation, a very serious woman on the back foot, right? We noted that during the dinner party, she had her awards out on the kind of mantelpiece and so on and so forth. Is that the same here? This is a private space. So if she still decides to kind of put her accolades out, that's telling.
This is a place where I think what is displayed in public spaces for Edith Truss is achievement, and in private spaces is planning. So between the calendar, the maps, the papers on her desk, like the communication that she has in this private working space is that she is working towards something. She doesn't really bother with accolades here.
Okay. Orimar notes this. A shame. It would be that kind of self-pride if she, even in private quarters, would be a leverage. But we can still work with this.
Yeah.
And eventually,
when you guys built Edith Truss as a character, and frankly, Arivedi, you did make them clever people.
Oh, yes.
Which does make them harder to manipulate.
Oh, yes. But hey, we love a challenge. At this point, we're probably by the door, and Orimar, with like not looking, is reaching backwards for like the door handle.
Is there anything out like in this room on the way to the door that could be either perceived as valuable or like Like, does she have like a key ring by the door or something like that?
Oh, you're trying to steal something important useful.
Mm-hmm. I want to use one of my skills and steal something.
It might not be monetarily valuable, but it might be valuable information if there's a lot of stuff pinned to the walls, right?
I think what it is, especially in the physical squabble that you had, there is probably, and this isn't super valuable, but it's the only thing that I think would actually be out in a place where it could actually be swiped and mm-hmm. not immediately missed. This is a place that runs on a technocratic schedule. Everybody needs to be in specific places at specific times. There are shift changes that happen on specific schedules. And this is somewhat mass-produced, but it would probably only be in the hands of management. I think there are extra printings of this shift schedule in this office that Jonnet can grab.
Okay, cool. All right, so then I'm going to spend, I think it's one of my points in presence to play my skill. He's new here. And if I have above 4 presence, people forgive ignorance or mistakes easily. And so I'm going to try and use that for like in one like last hurrah moment. Jonnet's going to like, quote unquote, break free of the ear hold. And mm-hmm. like he's going to run over to a desk of important looking papers like I want to see what important people do and at important events. I want to learn, Father. I want to learn.
You learn about important events, about this over dinner. Now, for now, I want you to sit on that couch outside, take out one of your illustrated books, and sit still.
And as Captain is saying that and, like, probably going to grab Jonnet again, he's, like, ruffling papers, and in ruffling papers, he, like, grabs maybe one of these schedules and tries to pocket it.
I think the way your skill works, again, especially combined with Edith totally believing what is happening, despite feeling mm-hmm. awkward, I think you use that ability that allows the awkwardness to be smoothed over fairly easily. Edith Trust does not understand what is appropriate behavior from children. She has distanced herself so much from that, like, deeply human thing. It's like, doesn't understand, like, sure, this is why I have distanced myself from children, is this behavior. 17 and 5 are not a huge difference to me. And so she's just so awkward about the whole situation. I think she is not going to, I think this is a very simple challenge. I am going to need you to make an agility roll, but this is a very easy agility roll to overcome.
My goodness.
Rolled 4. And so that would be finesse, correct?
Yeah, finesse. I'm sorry. I got to remember the names.
Oh, hey, buddy, you all good.
In my own game.
All right. So then, and then that'll be a D8 mm-hmm. or 3 D8s.
Ooh, big roll.
Oh, okay. Okay. Roll it up.
So then that's an 8. A 7, and a 5.
Okay.
All right. So you absolutely succeed. This gives you opportunities. I think this has a lot of very specific information in it. I think there was probably more than one spare copy. So literally no one is going to notice that this is gone. You also get a point of fate. You'll want to note that somewhere so that you can use it later. But yeah, you are expertly able to pocket it and leave yourself from the room. Edith is in a position where she is trying not to notice the display because she very much would like to do business with La Baleste, mm-hmm. and she is willing to endure the discomfort of this particular situation so that she can get what she wants.
Eventually, I think, you know, Oromar kind of grabs you by the back of your collar and is dragging you back out the room, and eventually there's a door slam. Julian La Baleste turns back to Edith Truss, gently tucking a loose dread back under the head wrap, re-curling or like re-layering the pencil moustache, since, you know, he shaved his beard and bits and pieces like that for the disguise, but readjusts a cravat. Right. Where were we?
I have need of working with a privateer, and a privateer of some resource. There are things that I am trying to do to expand our operations here. I believe if operations are successfully expanded here, it will become unignorable at the center of Red Feather Command that what I have developed here is important and useful and must be expanded across the whole of Red Feather operations.
Of course. I mean, I'm surprised you didn't name the shade after yourself. You are setting an entire difference in the name of the company. The brand is everything.
Mr. LaBalest, I, once again, appreciate your flattery. It is the reason that you are sitting in this room. I believe you know how to talk to people in power.
Yes.
However, Red Feather Crimson is not what I am here to discuss. It is the operation itself, the factories that we've set up here. The more that the Red Feather fleet becomes dependent upon our operations, the more our processes become important to the Red Feather fleet. I am trying to develop new pigments. There are none that are quite as useful as Red Feather Crimson, but I do believe I have stumbled upon another product in the process of my productions that could be exported to some effect.
Okay. Julian takes... I assume there's like a chair on the other side of the desk. And Julian kind of takes it, sits it down. Sits at ease, legs crossed, hand on knee, hands together on knee, making eye contact. Now, Miss Truss, I am... very keen to assist in this endeavor. It does sound awfully exciting, more so than dealing with the pensions and wills of people well established within the company. This sounds like an adventure. But there is something about the nature of the production of the dye that I am curious about before we proceed. Do not worry, I'm not asking you for trade secrets. This is more of a matter of safety.
Ah, yes. I am happy to answer any questions that you might have to the best of my abilities.
Of course. So, this has become very clear in my limited time here that the process of working on the dye is a very exact but also dangerous procedure. It seems that everybody is very well equipped with protection from it, but there has been zero discussion of the raw material involved. What is it?
Yes.
I must know.
There is a natural resource that grows in this particular area that, for the longest time, could only be harvested. One of the great achievements of my operation was figuring out how to expand that production. That is what allowed me to set up for the impending victory that I am chasing now. For a long time, it was not known how to cultivate what it is we use to produce this pigment. It's not something that I am eager to explain in full, but no, in the areas surrounding Sorrow's End, we harvest the raw ingredients that make up what we refine into Red Feather Crimson.
There is a wry smile. Cultivated, you say? So it's not the same as the clay that is being used for pigments here. Interesting. But...
No. If only the crimson could be a mineral pigment. But unfortunately, it is the reason that our processes here are so robust.
Right.
And that need is actually what allowed me to discover the true innovation of this place.
But the thing that is fascinating me here with this information is that it's something you can now grow elsewhere.
Elsewhere remains to be seen. I have not run any tests outside of the climate, mainly because what we do here, it is very important for the time being that I be the sole overseer of that operation.
Of course.
Should it fall into the hands of a political rival, it could easily pull the Red Feather's attention away from the true prize of this place.
Mm-hmm. Of course, of course. Thank you for sating my curiosity. I was up all night thinking about what it could have been. I was even preparing to go and settle a bet, but don't worry, your secret is safe with me.
I appreciate your discretion. Again, the secret of the dye's production is simply a means to an end. Red Feather Crimson, though it is useful, again, is not what I see as the most useful thing that we could export from this colony. Now, forgive my brusqueness, Mr. Lobelest. Do you consider yourself an intellectual? And I will tell you, honesty will go far with you here. I have no problem adjusting my explanations if you fear technicality.
Ah, well, while in my line of work, I do have to maintain an air of frivolity when it comes down to dealing with very dangerous people and making sure that everyone makes it out happy and alive. Well, not always happy. It requires a keen mind. This is to say, hit me with your best shot, Ms. Truss.
I had a sense about you, and I am glad to see that I was right about that sense. You see, the most valuable product that could be exported from this colony is not crimson, nor the new pigments that I wish to export, nor even the byproduct weapon that I have discovered, which exists here. It is the way we could change the world through process, a cycle that could be created to endlessly benefit the Red Feather Syndicate and all of its component pieces across the whole of Sphere.
You're talking about solving a labor issue.
Indeed. More creating a society that solves labor issue through itself.
I think there is... eye contact has generally been made across this conversation. But at the moment that Julian says labor issue, I don't know, there is like... We almost feel like the background start to fade out slightly. Mm-hmm. The lighting of these two characters is the same, but the rest of the world is no longer important. She is talking about a perpetual slavery system.
Yeah.
Production for Crimson is dangerous. And as a matter of cause, it was prudent to reduce that danger as much as was physically manageable. I have done that. However, it appears there is only so much it can be reduced. It would be most beneficial if there could be a flow of human lives through this place that did not result in deaths. Deaths benefit the Red Feather Syndicate not at all. As we bring people here, as they become afflicted, it is not uncommon for people to be buried before their sentences should be fully served out. Now, it is no great tragedy that someone should be buried with debt over their head, especially if we've extracted enough value from that life in order to seed our operations everywhere. As it were, it is very easy to see how it could be useful to an organization like the Red Feather Syndicate to have control over someone through the whole of their life. But if that life ends prematurely, then that leaves much value that goes unclaimed. A system of debt, where debt is created and credit is extended, could solve a number of problems for the Red Feather Syndicate. Tell me, what do you know about Red Feather coin, bits and bars?
Bits and bars are my business, Miss Truss. I don't know if there's necessarily a finer detail explanation in...
There is a finer detail, but she will launch into it because she's going to give you her James Bond villain monologue.
Sure. I think Ormar says something, and then we're going to the detail of it, to the effect of kind of like highlighting an older minting process because he's worked for the Red Feathers. He knows this information. Oh, I'm very familiar with how the Red Feathers like to handle their coin. What of it?
Yes. Part of the operation is ingenious in a way. It allows us to track commerce. Each bit is marked with the port where it is spent at a significant Red Feather partner business. That is recorded into ledgers, and that is used to project where shipping lines should go in the years following. It helps us do things like stamp out crime, know which ports are most valuable, know where goods ought to be distributed for the maximum of profit. But it also creates a backup. There are many cities where Red Feather coin becomes stamped all too quickly. There is a problem of people holding massive hoards of reserves that cannot be exchanged for fresh, unstamped coin because there is not enough transport. You could transport a large vessel full of fully stamped coin or unstamped coin anywhere in Sphere, but you would create a danger for piracy or other measures where that coin might disappear into aethers. It is too much of a risk, and so commerce halts. However, credit could be extended against these hoards. We could allow people to borrow, and thus create a system of debt, which ultimately makes people, any people, vulnerable to labor. Labor is something that the Red Feather Syndicate will always require. Whether we are producing a dangerous good like crimson or using something like the might of our soldiers, we will always require bodies across the whole of Sphere. And labor can only be purchased in ways that people are willing to sell it. Desperation can be engineered into a system without making people feel its bite. It is very common when you push people too far that they move into riots. But look around you, Mr. Lobelest. You exist within a town where people's very lives have been pulled apart at the seams by a disease. They have been forced into a condition where they must accept near certain death. And are they in the streets? Do they throw bricks? Do they light fires? No. I have found a system by which they believe they can escape through proper behavior, through diligent practice, where they believe the tragedy that has spilled into their lives is their own fault. Mistakes that they have been made that can be mended through proper behavior, all reinforced by the messaging of the system itself. I propose that properly, the Red Feather Syndicate might be able to use the flawed system that we have with our coin, the backup of transferable liquid funds, and create a system of credit that would allow us to extract a near unlimited source of labor, all within legal systems that people would approve of, that people would willingly submit to because they believe it would advantage themselves.
Hey Heroes, it's James, your Game Master, and welcome to the Midroll. Heroes, my new book, The Ultimate RPG Game Master's Guide, is officially out and available wherever books are sold. If you like the way that I run this game here on Campaign Skyjacks, and you'd like to bring some of that flavor to your table, the Game Master's Guide is perfect for you. I try to lay out in as much detail as my publisher would allow my approach to running games and give you different techniques and tools that you can use at the table to sharpen your own GMing skills. You can pick up a copy of the Ultimate RPG Game Master's Guide by heading to bit.ly/ultimategamemaster or bit.ly/gamemasterrpg. And if you did pick up a copy, you could do me a huge favor by heading over to Amazon and leaving a rating and review. Those ratings and reviews are extremely helpful, and you can leave them whether or not you bought the book on Amazon. To do that, just head to bit.ly/GameMasterRPG. Heroes, if you're in the Chicago area, April 26th through the 28th, you can catch me and Jeff and John from System Mastery at C2E2. We're going to be doing the Netflix and Kill RPG game show Friday, April 26th at 4 p.m. in room 402B, and the Ultimate RPG World Building panel April 28th at 12:45 p.m. in room 402B again. Please stop by because we would love to see you there, and we'll have free books to give away. As always, a huge thank you to our backers on Patreon. Today, we have a brand new episode of Starwall up on the feed, so once you're done listening to this, head over to Patreon and check it out. I am also diligently working away at some bonus content that I have been working on for just a long period of time. We have like 8 more episodes of Chubo's Marvelous Wish-Granting Engine that haven't aired yet. There was a huge audio error that I have had to painstakingly repair by hand, but it is almost finished. You can get access to all that and more if you head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up for $5 a month or more. A huge thank you to everyone who supports us already, and everyone who's going to support us in the future. Now then, a quick word from our sponsor. And with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky.
Through this conversation, Orimar has been eyeing around the room and looking for every single item in this room that he could kill this woman with right here. The window.
The thing is, yeah.
Outside. We'll maintain the tone, but looking at the window outside, what's outside? Or is it a stained glass window where we can't see?
This is, I think, like, there. It's a lot of small glass windows that are put together in like a nice pattern, but this is a first floor window. What is immediately outside is like the generalized landscaping of this area, which is not like you can see people milling about in a courtyard outside. The thing about this, like receiving this message in this particular office, is how mundane it all is. This is the idea of some bureaucrat buried in a far-flung part of the Red Feather's reach. Everything about this is reduced human lives to notations in ledgers on paper. There is no scenery-chewing, like, evil here. This is all a practical note of the way the world works and the way the world could be shifted to work.
The way the world could accept this new way of work.
Yes. How easy it could be to spill things in this direction simply because it makes economic sense for almost everyone involved.
As the conversation goes, as this explanation is going, we hear kind of like a rising tone, a rumble, something building in this kind of dark space. Occasional flashes of like Orimar, a version of Orimar having lifted the chair and flung it at her. A version of this where Orimar has found a letter opener and is leaping at her. A version of this where Orimar has removed every single tack pin from the walls and has them in his fist.
I think it is like it is these are visions of violence within Orimar's mind that Orimar, even no longer dead, like
does have like this horror movie thing. So like, I think it moves from like mundane violence mm-hmm. into a place of Orimar becoming the monster that could possibly enact judgment that this person deserves.
Yeah, like the last shot of it, especially the point where she's talking about, and the people will just accept it. There is just a twisted, hulking form of sinew and bone filling the entire frame, just bearing over this woman. And then we're in the room. You're a genius, Edith Truss.
I appreciate the compliment, and your instinct to give it, again, indicates to me that you would be the proper partner in this endeavor.
Ooh. Unfortunately, I do believe that there is a person in your way. You did mention that the way that the inhabitants of Sorrow's End are remaining docile. I don't believe that is fully your doing. After all, they do have a man of the cloth to turn to put their souls at ease. And I think that is a facet you do not have full control of yet.
You are correct. It is not my intention to remove all obstacles. As you know, the world is a carefully balanced thing. If you remove too much of one thing, it becomes unstable and creates an opportunity to spill. I do dearly wish that if the church was to distribute a rival to my home region, that it had not been one with a mind like Aravetti. He is a worthy opponent, and even in a situation where there is mutual benefit between the Red Feathers and the Church, has managed to make himself a dangerous instability to my operation. My wish is simple. I do wish that the Red Feather Syndicate was able to control the prices of the baths that the Church offer to treat the Crimson Affliction. But that is something that is solely controlled by Aravetti. And through observation, he has learned things about debt on his own. He has learned that it is possible to force people into desperate circumstances where they are willing to sell great value for relief. And he has built up a culture of very strict adherence to the way of sovereignty within this place. That is an unstable threat, certainly. We can coexist, and I do know that Aravetti's goals and aims ultimately do not rest here. There is, in the fullness of time, a way for Aravetti to leave my sights and graces and for us to coexist in different plots of sphere until fate would have it that we both swell to sit atop our various organizations and class again with a great deal more power sitting behind us.
You view him as your equal?
I view him as a threat.
So, Miss Truss, I offer a ship and I offer smooth words, and I do believe both of those things are useful to you. But if we are to do business, there is an exchange to be taking place, of course, surely. What are you offering me aside from the honor of being involved in your masterwork?
That comes with a very difficult question, and one that I can't answer on my own. I do not know what your ambitions are, Mr. Labalest. I could offer you wealth, but I believe you have a great deal of it already. That doesn't mean that this isn't a lever by which you operate, but it makes it unlikely for me to put a fortune in front of you and for that to be all said and done. I have things that I could offer, but I need to know what it is you want for me to find a way to offer it to you.
Oh, what I want, Miss Truss, is very simple, really. It is adventure. After all, there are many people in my station who look at the sky, who look at the sphere that is sphere, and dream of being places where they are not.
Sphere is flat.
No.
I shoot her. No.
We sit upon a flat plane.
We can't do this. She would not survive the scene. My fault for doing a good callback. Resuming tone. What I yearn for is adventure. There are many people of my background who look at the stars and wish that they could travel among them to go to sights unseen. And I am doing excellently on my quest so far. But there are some places yet. When you even have free travel over the skies, there are some places that you cannot go. Which is profoundly frustrating to me. Despite the work that I have done for the Red Feather Syndicate, they refuse. They have repeatedly snubbed me to get into what I believe is one of the most breathtaking events. I would love to attend the masquerade. And I do believe it could be to your credit, since there are other people who are very jealous of your position.
You ask for nothing small, Mr. Lobelest. But of course,
I am not a small man.
Well, what I wish to achieve is no small matter either. I believe an exchange could be made. I have aims of my own to attend the masquerade this year. My policies should be in the ears of the greatest and most influential minds within our organization. There are rumors, you see.
Oh?
The ball is a regular occurrence. Every few years, major policies are decided. But the Red Feather co-founder, the acting president of the Red Feather Syndicate, is rumored to be in attendance to this year's event. It is a massive opportunity for one with ambitions like mine. I must be there. And if I were there in the company of one such as yourself, one who is able to smooth diplomatic pathways between me and someone who could truly dictate my vision for the future of Sphere, why, my victory would be far closer at hand. It would shave years off of my planning. So much difficulty could be easily wiped away.
My, we could just accelerate each other to the stars. How fortuitous for you to have met me.
Indeed, it seems the lumens have shined brightly on this place for the first time in quite some time. So, here is what I propose to you. I have a new export, which I believe the minds at Central Red Feather Command will finally be able to look at as a true boon, more valuable than the practical value that is presented by Red Feather Crimson. That was enough to get this place operationally sufficient, but not enough to divert true resources to what could be developed and exported here. However, I have stumbled upon a weapon, which is something that all men in all places find value in. A product of the Crimson is something that was able to be exported to some value, but I believe that value can be raised considerably. Maledicio Dumar, the byproduct of the Crimson, is a highly toxic substance, something that we have used to great effect over the past year. It can be poured into the seas. It takes care of sea life that it touches. It is very, very dangerous to be touched by human hands, but it is lethal to most living things, including drowned sailors. It is a practical deterrent to the coastlines and has served better than cannon bombardments, which can only sink ships, and the mariner is very good at maintaining his ships. However, lives of drowned sailors are a harder resource to protect and it is much more difficult to strike them down unless you are willing to spend your own soldiers in hand-to-hand combat. Using the Maledicio, we are able to more effectively combat the Mariner and the sea monsters that exist within the cursed oceans. The only problem with it, for quite some time, is it was simply a liquid that could be dropped or smashed in barrels and dispersed that way. There was no way to disperse it over a wide area with ease. However, there is a way using burning materials that reach a certain heat. So far, bright amber is the only thing that I've found, but it can be aerosolized, turned into a cloud. That poison is capable of wiping out large swaths of living things. Now, I have no interest in how this weapon could be deployed. There are enough enemies of the Red Feather Syndicate, drowned sailors and pirates alike, that I could see fit to employ such a weapon against. But I do believe such an export would be valuable to military leaders within the Red Feather Syndicate, which have a larger sway than the economic ears that I already have my voice in. I would love for some of the Maledicio to be in your hull when you leave this port, along with my other goods. The more that we can convince people to buy from here when the privateers and Red Feather vessels return, the more value we can propose that this port has to the Syndicate, and the greater political power we will have to support our vision for the future of Sphere.
My, I have traveled to many markets across Sphere, but this is certainly the most dangerous free sample I have ever been offered.
Well, nothing comes completely free. We are mutually beneficial, but coin will need to be exchanged. I can arrange for some discount because, again, it is a mutually beneficial operation. But just like our dear friend at the church, if I've given you too much, you move from being an ally to a powerful threat, and I can't have that.
No, of course not. And you don't want to be perceived as cooking the books. I will be more than happy to give you some bits, maybe a little more for your services.
It all comes down to debts. The more that we are in debt to one another, the more that we can be assured to count on the proper behavior from one another. That is how the world has always worked, and we will enter a glorious new era where we treat that with intention.
I've spent my life's work navigating the debts of rich men, and so far I have remained on the other side clear. But I suppose we shall both be on the lookout for what we are owed.
Excellent. I shall prepare agreements for you and yours to look over. There will be official agreements and off-the-books agreements, both presented in writing, though one to be retained and one obviously to be destroyed. And I will begin marking my political contacts and letting them know that I wish for Julian Lobeleste to be part of my party when we attend the masquerade.
Marvelous. Now, he stands up from the chair, breaking the tension. I do need to go and retrieve my idiot son, and the display that he put forth in front of you today will not go unacknowledged at the dinner table. Miss Truss.
Far be it from me to advise a father on raising a son, but I do wish you luck, and you have my sympathies.
Sometimes it takes less than the threat of poisoning to make somebody behave. He offers a hand.
Edith stands up and extends her hand as well.
There is a spark between the hands, metaphysical, as it clasps. I think there is maybe, would it be bold of me to say that we simultaneously think one day I will have to kill this person?
Yeah, I think that is appropriate. It is just there are two results that Edith Truss sees for one such as you. Obviously, you are too important a resource not to enter an arrangement with, mm-hmm. but she experienced that you are indeed not just a canny social navigator, but are also clever, which means she is going to give you an amount of power she believes that she will be able to outpace. And should you grow to the full extent of what you must be, yes, one day she believes she will have to kill you.
And the tension breaks and he leaves the room.
We see a gigantic man hunched over a writing desk with a comparably like tiny looking pencil clasped in the muscles of his huge hands as it is poised over a sheet of paper. He's got sweat rolling down his forehead. His brow is furrowed.
Hey, behind him up walks Johnny. Hey, Slam. It seems like you're working on something really important. I gotta tell you, you can't set up a desk in the hallway, man. You gotta just. We have rooms for this.
I could hear your moans of consternation from like other rooms on the ship. To be honest, it's
Your position right next to the vent. Your voice is going everywhere.
Yeah, sorry about that. I managed to find a nice piece of paper on the ship, and I felt the need to write an old friend.
Oh, somebody got into the cardstock. Okay,
who are you writing to, Slam?
I like to think that a lot of the people on this ship have been mentors to me one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of other ways, the real mentors to me have been the talking animals on the ship.
Animals.
Like the rabbit, the snake, the raven.
Yeah. Right.
The coyote. They all kind of had great advice for me in times of need. So.
Okay. Can I ask, was the advice amongst your animal friends consistent or wildly conflicting?
In a weird way, I'd say both.
You know what, that tracks. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
okay. What piece of advice was your favorite? What's your favorite piece of advice from your animal friends?
Let's see. I mean, there was a time when I was worried that I wouldn't be able to hit the gym as frequently because my responsibilities in the ship, I took a step up. And I think it was a snake who said, if you cannot grasp the center, you must grasp the side, you know?
Right.
Okay.
The confused blinking. I can see that being.
I wrestled with that one for some time. Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand why.
I just, I look at the man I am today, and I gotta give credit to those little dudes.
You definitely have not skipped arm nor leg nor left pec day for sure.
No. So.
Nor neck day.
I'm trying to. I owe all of them, and they all went on simultaneous vacations to different spots in the sphere.
At separate times?
Well, all at the same time. They're all gone separately to different places at the same time. It's just how the schedule worked out, I think they told me.
Like,
did they give you an address?
An address? Well, not in as much, but yeah, I feel like if I address it to the talking animal, like most, it's going to get to the right place. How many talking animals are there going to be? You know, I only met them on the ship.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You'd be surprised, actually, but sure. Yeah. All right. It's a Santa situation.
It's a letter to Travis.
It. Who?
Travis, the talking animals. Well, I mean, there's Travis and Travis and Travis or Travis, and I have to pick one of them.
All right. Yeah.
Gable takes Jonnet and the captain aside. Okay, this was fun at first, but I'm very concerned about Slam just inventing people whole cloth that simply don't. I've never seen any animals, and if there's infestation, we need to address it.
Gable, I think all we can do is keep Slam close to us.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Doing that is the best for him, for us, and really it's all we could do to support Slam.
Have you all met a Travis? I know I haven't.
I mean,
I remember, no, that was a Taylor. I met a Taylor.
I also met a Taylor. I think that's who he's talking about. Slam, why don't you just write it as if it were a diary? Say, here's what I did today. Hope you're well. And then you can just send it to anyone. Then it doesn't need to be personalized.
Oh, well, no. I mean, I wanna connect with people who used to be close to me. You know, whenever I found myself in a place of like quiet contemplation, they were there to guide me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Actually, since Travis, and Travis left the Uhuru, have you had those moments where you've wanted to kind of like call out to the guidance of your animal friends since then? And has anything happened?
Well, I mean, only the normal stuff that happens when a person calls out, you know, for the help of animal friends. I'd have an assortment of birds and mice and chipmunks arrive and sing a kind of tune, but they can't speak our language. So it was like animal sounds.
Slam, I need you to be so clear about this. I need you to be so clear.
Yeah.
Are you describing a series of animals that are genuinely engaging with you and singing little songs to you? Or are you just rolling around in rats' nests and touching animals and chasing after them en masse? I need you to tell me if there's a distinction there.
You know, I feel like maybe it's a matter of perspective.
Okay, no, it's not. It's either one or the other.
The actuality is, what are you doing these situations? Is there ever an instance where an animal is following you, or are you chasing after all the animals?
Well, I mean, the animals come to me.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, right. I call, I'm like, hey.
Oh,
that's
God.
The call.
Oh my gosh, there
animals.
Are so many mice.
Whoa.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
Oh God.
Oh, they are singing in 7-part harmony.
Wow.
I had no idea there were so many mice on this boat.
This is an impressive skill.
I rarely have any sort of existential crisis at the juicing station.
Right. And for that, we're grateful. We're very grateful.
Yeah, yeah.
So setting aside the fact that you've been calling out to your specific animal friends and they haven't been arriving, which means he's doing an absolutely fucking terrible job. But setting that aside, let's go with the snake one for now, shall we? And then we'll find you a new piece of paper later.
Oh, yeah. I'll just send a letter to the snake. It's so obvious. Wow, you really solved everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yes, of course I did. That's why I'm your captain. That's why I'm making the big plans, the big time plays for the big time players. You understand?
Yeah, sure.
Slam, go ahead, write that letter, send it off to that snake. You do you. Is there a way to disperse all of these rats? Because the hallway is now more blocked than it was before.
My skill set is more in congregation.
Maybe you can lead them in a direction, exeunt stage right to the deck, and maybe that would be for the best for now. And we'll see what we can do about your writing desk.
All right.
And the pied bodybuilder goes off, leading a trail of mice behind him.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
There he goes.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No King system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT, or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Ali Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at DreamsToBecome or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.